This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
Discover more of our shows at soundrebel.co.uk.
So, welcome to Dilemmas with Jess Ellis. And we have got our guest today, Andy Gran. Obviously, we've never met before. Mm-hmm. So this is a bit of a different one for me. I think I've only ever done this once with, was it Rachel Rhodes, that I'd never met before. But mm-hmm. I like this because it's out of my comfort zone. I don't know what kind of advice you're going to give. For our listeners, do you want to just give us like a little, the history of you and what you do?
Well, I must admit, I'm already worried about the advice I'm going to give because, again, because of my life, as I'll explain now, I've just had a pretty crazy life, so yeah. I don't think my advice will be
no. I think it'll be good though, like if with your life, I think that'll be great.
Yeah,
because you probably won't be bogged down with the small things that people,
well, that's what I mean. Yeah, so normally my advice is maybe sometimes a little bit just, I don't know, we'll see.
But
I've had a pretty crazy life. So I was in the Royal Marines. I joined the Marines when I was 17.
Yeah,
I served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and then it was while in Afghanistan, it was just a pretty crazy time. It was in 2009, which in hindsight was the deadliest year for British armed forces. 108 British soldiers were killed in 1 year. And they say for everyone that was killed, on average 7 or 8 are seriously injured. So kind of, we knew it was bad at the time. It's only when you look back, actually, you think. You
know, so like 10 years ago now?
10 years ago now, yeah. Yeah. And I had about 6 weeks left to push and I was blown up. I was on a routine foot patrol. My best mate was leading the way. He's jumped over an irrigation ditch. It's 5:30 in the morning, so it's pitch black.
What's an irrigation ditch, just for someone?
Just in, like, in a farm, you know, like a ditch in the farm. Like, they use irrigation ditches to filter water from the Helmand River into the fields.
Okay.
Yeah, my mate jumped over one. And on the other side of the ditch, there was 2 trees. And in between the 2 trees, there was a tripwire. This tripwire was attached to 2 bombs. He's jumped, hit this tripwire. I was the second man. 2 bombs went off in between us, blowing him forward and blowing me back. And that's 1 split second, you know, my whole life changed forever. Mm. I had 27 separate injuries, shrapnel to my face, broken elbow, broken sternum, severed my femoral artery, chunks out both forearms, was in a coma for 2 weeks. And then that started the kind of the rehab process then of obviously just getting my life back on track.
What was it like when you first came out of the coma? You were in a coma, but did you know about your injuries before the coma or after?
I didn't know to the extent of my, you know, what was wrong with me, but I knew straight away I'd been blown up, you know, whereas the guy, my best mate Ian, he can't remember anything about it. Whereas I knew when I woke up, I remembered being blown up.
Okay, yeah.
And then obviously in the next coming days, the doctors, surgeons, gave me the kind of full rundown of all of my injuries and what the kind of prognosis was. And yeah, that was just an emotional time then, coming to terms with all my different injuries. You know, 1 minute I was this big, rough, tough Royal Marine commando.
Yeah.
The next minute I'm getting spoon-fed by my dad. You know, it was a big wake-up call of just how life was going to be for me now. I spent 3 months in hospital and I actually kept the leg at the time. My right lower leg was pretty badly damaged, but they'd managed to save it. And then after about 18 months... the leg wasn't healing as I'd hoped it would. So I made the decision myself to have the leg amputated to live a better quality of life.
Yeah.
And then since having the leg amputated, I learned to walk, then I learned to run. I took part in Prince Harry's Invictus Games, which was a little bit like the mini Paralympics, basically, for injured soldiers.
Yeah.
I won a couple of gold medals at that. And then that kind of acted as a bit of a springboard then. And I thought I'd love to go on to the Paralympics itself. Unfortunately for me, the longest distance in the Paralympics was 400 metres, and I like to run a bit further than that. So I thought there's got to be other amputees in the world who like running longer distances. Googled a guy from Canada who'd lost his leg in a car accident, and he was the fastest single leg amputee in the world, over 10,000 metres. So I kind of set my goal to try and beat him. And then in July 2016, I broke that record by 36 seconds and ran 10K in 37 minutes, 17 seconds.
Go on, lad.
The fastest single leg amputee in the world.
So that's 10K?
Yeah, so 6.2 miles.
So how fast did you do it in?
37.17.
Right, because my boyfriend Michael is about to do a 10K for Movember in Croxeth Park in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And he's never... all of a sudden, a couple of weeks ago, he just decided that he wanted to do this.
Oh, good on him.
But I want to know what time he's going
to
do.
Yeah, without trying to sound like a douchebag, but he'd be, if he's not ran before, he he shouldn't be 37-70 anyway.
Well, he did a 5K. He did the Scouse run the other day. Yeah, yeah. And he did his 5K in 26 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is quite good.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like before this, I just didn't know anything about running. Yeah. But he gets obsessed with stuff now. So he's got the watch. He's got the bell.
He's got all the gear.
No idea.
Yeah. So yeah, I've done that. And then I've since like learned to ski, I've learned to surf, I've climbed some of the world's highest mountains. And then when I'd done the world record, that was then the cue for me then to write a book. So I work with a good mate of mine, a guy called Phil Reed, and he ghost wrote my book, which is called You'll Never Walk. And that was a good chance for me really to put the world to rights, because I do my job now as a motivational speaker. I go around schools, businesses, universities, sports teams, do motivational presentations, telling my story, trying to inspire and motivate. But obviously it's impossible to, in 45 minutes or so, talk about the downtimes as well. So the book was a great chance for me to almost...
I bet as a whole.
And talk about, you know, times when it wasn't so great. You know, there was times when I was going through my recovery where I was drinking too much, I was gambling too much, relationships were breaking down around me. And one big thing I didn't talk about for a long time was I lost the ability to have kids when I got blown up. And that for me is a 20-odd year old guy getting told, you know, you can't have kids. It was something big, really, really big for me to deal with. And it was funny because people always thought that losing my leg was the worst thing, where for me,
it was not
being able to have kids, but just no one knew that. So when I finally sat down and wrote the book, it was a chance for me just to get everything off my chest and spoke about, the really dark times and not being able to have kids. And then thankfully the story ends in a nice way where I went through IVF and I've now got a little girl who's 5.
Amazing.
So it's all kind of, worked out well.
Can I ask you a question? Because I know someone that has been, I know of people that have been through injuries. Mm-hmm. I know of a few different stories of people at different ages, different stages in their life as well. And then through that injury, other things, great things have happened. Like, do you think that was the path that your life was supposed to take? And if you hadn't have had that injury, it would have been different. Do you know what I mean? I'm not trying to say, like, it's hard, isn't it?
No, it's a good,
I don't want to say, like, oh, it's good because you had it, but, like, that was your path and great things then have come from that.
Yeah, like my dad always says, like, the best thing that's ever happened to me was getting blown up.
Well, yeah, I've heard people say, do you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, I love my time in the Marines and I'd do it all again in a heartbeat. I've got some fantastic friends, I've done some amazing things and some amazing opportunities and memories. But now, I mean, I love my life now. I get to go around the world sharing my story, inspiring and motivating people. I've got my little girl. I'm really...
And didn't you do MasterChef?
That's a MasterChef, yeah.
Celebrity MasterChef.
You know the worst bit about... Nah, it's funny. It doesn't bother me. But the funny thing about that is, you know, I could go and climb Mount Everest. I could go and do anything and people will go, oh, you got beat by Joey Essex on MasterChef.
Oh my God, Joey Essex beat you? Yeah. Mate, that is bad.
That's bad, I know. The great thing with Scousers though, I remember just after it got filmed, I was in Asda and I was walking down the one of the aisles and some random guy said, hey Andy, the gravy's down that aisle. Because I really messed my gravy up. So couldn't take it too serious.
Well, I've heard that Joey Essex, it's all an act anyway, so.
No, I don't think so. I think the way to describe it is, speaking to him in the green room beforehand, it makes you feel like stupid. He's kind of going.
And you got beat, and he beat
me. And then he beat me. And he beat me. So, I sound like I'm slagging him off. It makes me sound even worse. But it was a good laugh. I certainly don't class myself as a celebrity nor a chef. So it was.
Did you learn some good skills, though?
No, you chefing. Don't really. No, you don't learn anything in that sense. You
just have
rock
to do
up
what
and,
you can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm great at following a recipe book. You know, me Joe Wicks, 15 minute meals, whatever like that. I can. Confident with that, but if I went in your fridge now and
opposite, you know,
I couldn't rustle something up, I couldn't do anything
I feel a bit restricted by recipes and I get a bit like, oh, have I not put the right thing? I'd rather just freestyle.
And that's what it was like. You turned up and he said, right, you know, remove the there was a tea towel over the like a thing, and he said, right, go and make that. And I'm like, you know, how long do I have to cook these for? So I was,
what a great experience though.
Yeah, it was a good laugh. Yeah, it was quite funny.
So have you listened to this podcast before?
I have, yeah.
Do you know what's coming?
Maybe now, yeah.
So we play a game called Double Dares. Okay. I mean, you can say no one else has. It's basically a jelly bean game. So we'll pick a colour. The only colour that you can't pick is blue, because for some reason they decided that all the other like flavours are like nice and disgusting, and this one's like blueberry or toothpaste, which I don't really get. But the others are like cola or cat food, strawberry or fresh blood. Nice. So we both have to take one. I always say this, producer Ben thought that I was exaggerating until he was sick in the sink.
Oh, what?
Nearly.
So a new rule is as well, well, it's not a new rule now, it's an old one, but you have to swallow it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it really. So I will go for a red one.
Okay.
Oh.
A kind of orangey brownie
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
Is it?
Yeah, nice. But it could be colour, it could be cat food. So after three, we have to eat them, okay? Okay. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, it's good.
I don't know what it is, but it's not really bad, so...
We have to go again.
Oh, we're going again, so one of us gets a horrible one.
Well, this is what we did with Leanne, actually. If we go again and we're good, mm-hmm. we'll get on with it. And at the end, we'll do it. And if it's good, we win.
Okay.
Okay. Go. I've got a good one again. Okay. I think the bad ones
are...
I think I need to top up, you know. I think I need to get to Home and Bargains. Listen, now I say Home and Bargains like I'm a real scouser. I need to get there and fill up. At the end, we'll come back to it and see what happens. Well, I think we should both do white ones. So, are you ready for our first dilemma?
Yeah.
So, I've not seen these dilemmas before.
Mm-hmm.
These are dilemmas that people send into our socials, slide into our DMs, and Ben sorts them out and sends them to us. Sometimes they give us their name, sometimes they don't. We're starting with one that's anonymous. Mm-hmm. I always think that's going to be juicy because you're not going to be a name. So that's anonymous 27 from Middlesbrough. Hi, Jess. My girlfriend is an absolute superstar. Is this Michael? She works for a manufacturing company and has recently been offered a big promotion. However, it would mean her spending a long time working in China every year, going away for between 8 and 12 weeks at a time. I'm really happy for her, but to be honest, I'm worried about the effect it will have on our relationship. I've done long distance before and it didn't end well. Do I tell her I'm worried or keep it to myself? I don't want to take the shine off her achievement. First off, Anonymous 27 Middlesbrough, great boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever you are. That's good, I think.
Mm.
But yeah, what do you think about that? What do you think about long distance? I mean, did you do long distance?
I've already got like two really negative kinds of experiences from it.
Okay, yeah. So no, I feel really good. Bad. No, go for it.
So I literally, a year ago last December, nearly I came out of a 2-year relationship because of pretty much long distance stuff. I met a girl a few years back. Funny enough, I met her in town, like the old school way, none of the Tinder stuff, just the old school, just in a bar, walked up to her, got chatting to her.
That's the weirdest part about the story, yeah, I think.
Yeah, that was the only thing we were so proud of. Well, we met just...
Yeah.
And literally, I think this was the Friday night, the Saturday before, she'd booked a basically round the world trip just to go travelling. So my chat up line was, you know, can we go for a drink? She said, look, I'm going away travelling in 9 months. And I was like, well, fucking hell, I'm not asking to marry you. I only want to take you on a date.
Yeah.
So for the next 9 months, we fell in love. It was all great, brilliant. 9 months later, then she goes to South America for 6 months. Then she went to India for a couple of months and then finished off in Australia. A 9-month trip altogether. And we'd done the whole, had our reservations about it, but we thought, you know what, we're in love. We had this amazing 9 months together. You know, it'll work. We can do everything. And I'll go out there for a couple of weeks. She can come home for Christmas. I'll go back out there. But I've just found it really hard from going from waking up, pretty much living together, waking up. So even the littlest things, I'm quite a deep thinking, emotional person anyway. So I went from waking up and the love of my life's in the bed to then, because of the time difference, I couldn't even text until 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
It's not the same as it communication-wise.
And it was like, and it was a big, big strain. And yeah, it was just really tough. And then trust issues come into it and various bits and bobs happening. With social media nowadays, things can get misconstrued. And it was...
I think it's even harder as well if this is like a travelling thing. It's, you know, it's not a job and it's, you know, I mean, not a holiday. Like, people need to, you know, go travelling for all different reasons.
Yeah.
But I think that if, like, one thing that I would say about this, if she's going to China and she's working or whatever, I mean, what kind of job does he or she do?
Mm.
Can they make something work in China as well?
Yeah, well, so yeah, on that, so then just... For that, I just think he's right to have reservations because, again, the time difference was probably the biggest one for me. But the other experience I had from it with job-wise, which is probably a bit more similar, is when she got back from travelling, we had kind of 6 months together trying to get it back together. And she got a job in Manchester, which is a lot closer than where China is.
Yeah.
But even that, she was having to leave the house at like 7 in the morning, wasn't getting back till 7 at night. And it was a job, a different type of job for her. Again, she's really, you know, really ambitious career-wise. And I remember saying to her, like, selfishly a little bit as well, you know, I've got a bit of reservations here. I mean, you're going to be knackered when you get in from work. Is this definitely what you want to do and stuff? And we even end up arguing over that by me kind of having the conversation that he's thinking about having. And she kind of took that for me not being supportive. And I was like, look, I am being supportive. This is a great opportunity for you. But I just want you to know that you do realise you're going to be up at, you know, 6 a.m, not getting home until maybe 7, 8 at night. And
yeah, it's hard. It's like, I think, like, me and Michael haven't actually had to go through it yet, but I know that because I'm an actor, that it's coming.
Yeah.
I was, for the first year, I was still in Hollyoaks, so literally round the corner, chill wall, absolutely fine. But I know that, you know, and I've got friends like Daisy and Luke. She's just got another tour for 6 months and that's going to different, you know, places. But, and I know that's coming for me and Michael too, because, you know, I'm not just going to, I mean, I might get a job in Manchester, a permanent job somewhere, or in Liverpool, but it's pretty, you know, do you know what I mean? So we are yet to go through that yet. But I think with this situation, I think you just have to see what happens.
Yeah.
Because some people are all right with it. Some people quite like it. I've got friends that go, you know, he works away a couple of weeks, a month, and I like it. It makes our relationship better.
Yeah.
We get to do all the things we want to do, see our friends do our thing, and then that makes it better. I also think that sometimes with long distance, that time you get together can then be put a lot of pressure on. So I know a lot of people that have broke up because that this is our weekend, it has to be special, rather than you could just stay in and watch the telly or whatever. It's like, no, we've got to do something.
Got to do something, yeah.
Because this is our time, and then that gets pressure. But I'd say for this guy, you know, let obviously celebrate. You seem like you're really supportive. Celebrate in this career, like, go through that. But you can have a conversation with someone, and I think she will expect it as well. Can have a conversation with someone about your worries about it without it turning into an argument, I think.
Yeah.
You can say, like, listen, I am a bit worried about this. I'm so happy for you, but I am worried about this. What are we going to do?
I think he needs to be honest with himself as well before, even from my experience, what I went through, those kind of two things with my ex, was to be honest with yourself. Like, is he a kind of emotional guy who's quite maybe, I say needy in the nicest way. I'm quite needy, and if he's honest with himself and thinks I need my girlfriend here, you know, I love having her around and stuff, and then, you know, will it work being, you know, the other side of the world and stuff?
But I think you've got to try it though. If you love someone, I think you've got to try it.
Yeah.
Because you know, what's the worst that could happen? You're going to split up. Like, that's going to be the end game anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how long is this job going to go on for as well? Like, are you thinking you're going to be with someone for the rest
of your
life?
How long have they been together for as well? I think it's a big thing.
Say. I mean, he's 27, so obviously, you know, they're not messing about I don't think. But I think to myself, you know, if you're 27 as well, like, what, is she going to be doing this China thing for a couple of years? You know, save a big fat wedge, and, you know, that's for your future.
Yeah.
And can you just deal with that for a couple of years to then better your life in the future?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think definitely having the conversation he definitely needs to bring up the conversation.
And maybe bring
that.
Some rules into it, you know, like what you're saying with the time thing. Right, work out a certain time. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, every day we've got this contact window and we've got to do it. We've got to, you know, things are good with FaceTime and stuff now.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah. It's a lot easier now, yeah.
You feel like you're in the room with someone, do you know what I mean? So, you know, why don't you come up with some certain rules, and if, you know, they start slipping and things don't start getting shit again, you need to have that conversation again. Yeah. But I think you've got to just try to make it work and see what happens.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I've just got bad experiences.
Yeah, you've got bad experiences with it. So I would say go for it. Make those rules. You know, don't piss on her chips straight away. But obviously have that conversation. She's not stupid. She'll be thinking the same things too.
Yeah.
Hi, we're Sound Rebel, and we produce this podcast.
Do you want a podcast? We'll make it for you, as long as you give us some money.
But not as much as you think. Podcasts are a really cost-effective way to engage with the people that matter to your business the most. Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk and we'd be delighted to talk to you about just how cheap they are.
Don't say cheap, say cost-effective.
Just how cost-effective they are.
Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk to find out more. Right, back to the episode.
Okay, so this is Millie, 21, from Rotherham. Hi, Jess. This dilemma is about my brother. He's been talking about his dream job for years, but he never applies for it because he says there's too many people who do and he'll never get an interview. My response of, how do you know until you get it, just gets shrugged off. Have you got any advice of how I could encourage him? I've been thinking that I just send an application off on his behalf without him knowing and then let him know if a positive response comes back. What do you think?
On that, I'm totally on here with that. my example with this, so funny. So in the Marines, there's a draft that you can get to Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean, and you work in the airport in Diego Garcia. And for years, it was like, oh God, you know, it's like bloody rock and horse shit. You know, it's impossible. No one ever gets it. You know, and one day this guy rocked up, and I thought he just passed out of training. And it turns out he's just got back from Diego Garcia. And I was like, whoa, how did you get that draft? You know. And he said, oh, mate, no one ever puts in for it. Everyone just thinks they can't get it.
Oh, really?
And I put in for it, and I was there six weeks later. So definitely it advises, you know, you don't know until you put in for it. Definitely rings true. To try and get him to understand that is obviously a little bit more difficult. But
I just think what's the worst that can happen? Yeah. Like, I've done that recently. Like, I've always wanted to write, and I've got so many ideas, but I'm not very confident with my structure or my grammar or spelling. I think that's always like kept me back a little bit in terms of writing, you know, for TV and plays and stuff. Anyway, this application came up for a writer's program at the Everyman Theatre, and it literally was closing on the Friday, and it was the Wednesday, and you had to do this application and write like 10 pages of a script. And I've always had these different scripts in my mind, and I just thought, I just borrowed my friend, I didn't even have a laptop at the time, I just borrowed my friend's laptop, and I just thought, fuck it. Like, what is the worst that's going to happen? They're just going to say no.
Totally.
They're just going to go, sorry. And they're not going to be like, no, fuck off, he's shit, because they're not even allowed to say that. But they're just going to go, sorry, didn't make it this time. And, you know, I ended up got an interview, and now I'm doing it. Like, and I'm so glad that I did it. And it didn't take much. It just took me just to commit to it and do it.
Also, it might be more of a personal thing for him, in the sense maybe he might have had knockbacks in the past, his confidence has been hit. Or actually, is that something that he says it's a dream job, but actually, is it really though? Because I think, you know, if you really want it, you know, you really go for it, then
he'd kind of... Is he just using it as an excuse to be like, oh, I would do that, but I just wouldn't get in.
Totally, yeah.
But I mean, what do you think about the element of her just doing it without telling him?
Yeah, I think it potentially cause a few problems, because let's just say...
I mean, it's a bit different than like suggesting someone to like take me out, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Also, I mean, like, what's in this application? Like,
it puts pressure on him though, in the sense that let's say she fills it out on his behalf, but then she says to him, right, I've got you an interview. I filled this out on your behalf. You've got an interview, and he's a bit like, oh well, yeah, but I don't really want to. You know, if he doesn't really want to do it, he's going to be a bit like, oh, well, you know.
But then I guess, like, if she does fill it out and she says that he's got an interview, if he doesn't want to go, then he just doesn't go.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I suppose.
I would say it's not a bad idea. It'd be quite funny, I think, to do that on his behalf, yeah.
Yeah, because then if you're right as well, you could just be like, oh, you've got an interview, and then see them shit themselves and be like, oh, I didn't want to. Or you could have the totally opposite positive wise of him being like, oh my God, like,
thank you so much. I can't believe you've done this.
Sometimes people need that push. Like.
Yeah, totally. And I think, funny enough, I had this argument with my sister the other day. I'm trying to get my dad in to go in the gym, and he's saying he wants to go. And I got him a membership for it. And then, which I thought was the right thing, but then my sister was like, oh, you can't keep forcing him into doing something that he doesn't want to do. And it's like, but sometimes though, you need to.
Yeah, gotcha.
You need that push. And once you push them once, then they're all right then. And they can
track on. I've been in loads of situations before where if it wasn't for someone going, just fucking do it, or someone just put it in front of my face, I wouldn't have done it. Like, and you know, and on the opposite, people have done my head in about stuff, and I just say in the end that I don't want to do it. Like, everyone's got a choice. Like, I think for this one, I think send it on his behalf.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
At the end of the day, no one's forcing him to go to that interview. Doesn't have to go for it if he gets it or what. I think that's a good option.
Yeah, and again, I'm deep thinking about stuff like that, but you know, you only live once. I mean, just go for it.
YOLO.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Martin, 50-something, which means he's nearly 60, from Loughborough. Hi, Jess. Before getting into the dilemma, just wanted to say how much I enjoy listening to your podcast. Thank you. I imagine I'm not your usual audience as a 50-something man, but Hollyoaks has always been my guilty pleasure. Guilty pleasure? I hate it when people say that. Such a backhanded compliment. And I enjoyed the podcast since episode one. Well, thank you very much, Martin. And you'd be surprised how old, actually, the generations of people that watch things, actually. Anyway, my dilemma is about my youngest daughter. She's letting life pass her by a little. And by that, I mean that she's not really committing to anything. It doesn't matter if it's a job, a relationship, even friendship. They all tend to be quite short term, and it's starting to worry me a bit. As her dad, what can I do to help her find some stability in life? I'm very aware that I'm not cool, so any advice from me directly would probably fall on deaf ears. Maybe I can just play her your response instead if it makes the podcast. It's not said how old she is.
That's what I was going to ask, how old, because that makes her think of the advice you kind of give at an age. Is she, you know, 17, 18? Is she 30? Is she...
I think we live in a weird world now, like even from our generation, like, and I think that's to do with social media and stuff, that a lot of children, a lot of like kids or teenagers see like influencers as a job. And I'm not like knocking any influencer or whatever, but I think they see like quick fixes where we didn't have that. Like, oh, it was like, you've got to like go to college and get a like trade, or, I mean, even my job was, even me going to drama school in London was looked down on from, I think, a few of my mum's friends as like not a proper job or whatever. But I think that maybe there are also, there's a lot of opportunities out there now that people don't know which direction to go. But he's saying that this is with friendships, relationships as well. Let's just assume that she's in her mid-20s. And also the other thing is that, you know, it's very hard to get on the property ladder now, isn't it? A lot of people are still living with their parents. Like, I moved out when I was 19. But a lot of my friends from back home, like, a few of them still live with their parents, you know what I mean? So I guess that's another motivation as well. Like, I always had to have a job because I had to pay my rent, I had to pay whatever. But I guess if you're at home...
I think as well with, this isn't no disrespect to him, but if, say, you know, he's in his 50s, it's a very different way of living.
Yeah.
Then it's kind of like what you're saying then. But I remember I had a thing with my dad. I came off the Marines. I was doing the motivational speaking, a little bit like acting in the sense you don't know when the next kind of gig's going to be and stuff like that. I'd split up from a girlfriend at the time and I was just kind of getting by a bit, but I was happy enough and I was doing my thing and I was confident within myself. But I remember my dad saying to me, you know, you need to get into the real world. And I, again, just through what I've been through, I was like, fuck the real world. I'd like the 9 to 5, what? Just because I'm not doing the 9 to 5, I'm not doing well in my life. I kind of said, look, leave me be to kind of find my own way almost. And so I don't think it's the worst thing in the world that she maybe hasn't got everything in one sock, and she's, I don't want to use the word like flaky, but, you know, a bit like not committing to anything just yet. Because again, I'm 31 and I still don't feel like I've got everything together and committed to everything.
Oh no,
you know? So,
definitely. I think
when parents, like my dad's 55, again, this was a few years ago, he kind of had a similar kind of view on me and was kind of saying, look, you know, oh, what's going to happen with this, and you need to do this and you need to do that. And I think maybe just they compare what it was like for them when they were in the mid-20s, and it was more of a responsibility of whether you hate your job or not, you have this 9 to 5, whether you just, you know.
And I think in terms of relationships as well, like, you know, people are getting in relationships, like, women aren't having children as early now, you know. They're not getting married at 25 because people are concentrating on their careers. And I think that's fine to do. You know, I was single for 10 years until I met Michael. Like, and that wasn't an issue. Do you know what I mean? So I wouldn't worry. I wouldn't worry about the relationship thing. I'd worry about the friendship thing, because I think it's actually really important to have, even if you just have one, that solid friend. I think that's an issue.
The mainstay friend, yeah.
You know, like... Also, she might not tell you everything. You might not know all of her friends, but maybe have that conversation like, so who, you know, who's... Yeah.
Or how so-and-so, you know.
Yeah, like maybe that, or do they want to come round, or like, why don't you do this or whatever. But I think if she's not motivated in terms of work or whatever, why not just sit down and like, I don't know, have a conversation, go away for the weekend or something, and without any pressure, just be like, what are your interests? Like... You know, are you interested in photography? Are you interested in this? Are you interested in makeup or whatever? Like, I would say with a parent, always try to seem like you're interested rather than you're telling them.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
Like, it's a conversation. It's not a lecture. It's just what are your interests? I'm interested. What do you want to do with that? And do you know what? She might open up to you and go, actually, I'm really interested in floristry or some. Do you know what I mean? Something quite obscure. And you'd go, all right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, what... And without being too, you know, overpowering, I don't go and Google a few things if she says something and go, oh, I've seen that there's a course on, or, you know, there's an evening class
once
a week.
I think as well, young people as well, especially, are so impressionable in the sense of, you know, is he kind of setting a good example in the sense of, you know, if he's going to give advice, maybe, you know, I always think if he feels life's passing by in that sense, you know, make sure he's kind of he's doing something or acting in the right way before he gives that advice and before he has that chat.
I always
think, because if someone's saying something to you, again,
yeah, what do you do? Have you got a job that you come home and moan about every single
exactly.
night?
Exactly, that's the kind of thing. Like my dad, like, he's done 30 years in the fire brigade, and when he come to me and was like, oh, well, what are you doing? You know, are you doing this speaking? Are you going to make a proper go of it? And I was like, well, I enjoy doing what I'm doing, but I don't want to do what you're doing because you bloody hate your job type thing. So it's kind of, you want to, and that could be about relationships, could be anything. So you want to make sure that, I think you're setting a perfect example, but you can almost see both sides of it as well.
And also just like, maybe check in on her, like, if you know, if she's not committing to certain things or relationships or friendships, you know, is her mental health okay? You know, is her confidence level okay? That can be, you know, mental health can affect your, you know, motivation, committing to things. They're quite big signs as well, you know. Or maybe she's just a bit of a private person. I know that there's lots of things growing up that I didn't necessarily talk to my mum and dad about, and there's probably relationships or friendships or interests that they still don't know about now.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just don't have, it doesn't mean you're not close. It just means that I'm not going to go home and be like, oh, mum, like, just got off with this guy last night and I'm seeing him for a couple, do you know what I mean? It's not totally serious or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that the main crux of this is just about communication and the way you communicate.
And he might surprise himself, or she might surprise him when they do have that conversation.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not about being cool or being on a level. I think it's just about just listening.
Yeah, just being there.
Yeah, just being there. Just some suggestive questions of, you know, what are you interested in at the moment? Or like, you know, start it off with like, what, I don't know, what are you watching at the moment? Is there any you know, try and find, it sounds to me like you don't really know her. Like, you don't know her properly, and you can live in the same house with someone, you can give birth to someone and you can not know them. Do you know?
I'm kind of saying that, oh, I'm not the cool kind of guy, he's kind of playing off a bit. Actually, just, yeah, take more of an interest and dig a little deeper.
And sometimes that's awkward, I can imagine, for a parent, but you've got to bite the bullet and do it. So thank you so much for being a guest on Dilemmas with Jess Ellis. Also, you have a podcast. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and the socials and where people can find it?
Yeah, no, first off, thanks for having me on yours. It's been great. It's been a good laugh. And that was the reason I started my podcast. I'm obviously out of the Marines now. I do motivational speaking and I just love chatting to people. I've loved this. I've loved hearing people's stories, people's backgrounds. And to mark 10 years since I was blown up in Afghanistan, I launched a podcast called The Legger Podcast. And it's a bit kind of Joe Rogan-esque. We just get interesting people on, from comedians like John Bishop to a guy who's climbed Mount Everest to a hostage negotiator to professional footballers and everyone in between. Just people with interesting lives. And the idea is we sit for an hour or two and just put the world to rights. So that comes out. We have a new episode every Monday. So that's been good fun doing that.
And you can find that on all of your podcasts.
Yeah, it's on
avenues.
YouTube and iTunes. And then just from me and my socials is Andy G Bootneck. So the word Bootneck is a kind of nickname for Marine. So yeah, Andy G Bootneck on Twitter and Instagram.
And does your podcast have any socials?
Yeah, the Legger Podcast on Instagram as well.
Okay,
yeah.
Amazing. And also, I've not forgot that we need to play this as well, just to see if we're both winners. Okay. I'm going to go for Wyatt. Oh my God, I can't even get it. I think that's Tutti Frutti or Rotten Milk.
I'm going to try and mix it up a bit.
Right, what have you got there?
It's kind of brown.
Cola or cat food?
Right, okay.
It's nice.
Cola.
Oh my God, we won. We won the end.
Discover more shows on the Sound Rebel Network.
Like Newsjacking with Dan and Katie.
Hello, my name's Dan.
Hiya, I'm Katie.
And we are back with our brand new podcast, Newsjacking. Is that what we're calling it?
That's what we're going with, yeah. Not to be mistaken for news jerking.
No, we did talk about news jerking, didn't we?
Posh Bem, the producer, can you confirm the name of our podcast? Is it Newsjacking or News Jerking?
No, we're going Newsjacking.
Okay. Better cancel those t-shirts I got ordered then.
We should probably explain what newsjacking is.
Yeah, what is newsjacking anyway?
Siri, what's newsjacking?
Newsjacking. The practice of taking advantage of current events or news stories as a way of promoting or advertising your own product or brand.
So essentially what you're saying is we're talking about other people's news as a way of drawing attention to our own new podcast.
Basically, yeah. It's shameless, but it's. I'm hoping it will be effective.
So that's News Jerking with Dan and Katie. It's going to be started...
Jacking.
That's News Jacking with Dan and Katie. Yeah. You can find us now in your podcast app.
News Jacking with Dan and Katie. Follow them on Twitter and Instagram @DanandKatie.